If you're building a business to sell, you are building a business. If you are not building a business to sell, you are self-employed.
Built one of the most respected marketing agencies in the roofing industry.
There's a lot of good people that do good work in your area. Why aren't they the most successful?
One of the biggest CRMs in the trades.
The higher your stack of channels creates consistent lead flow in your business.
Now he's back with his next big play.
The wolf is always chasing you. You have to keep running. There is no, you cannot stop, to your point. You can't stop. You'll get eaten alive if you stop.
This is AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros, the show for contractors who want to grow without wasting time or money. If you're in roofing, HVAC, plumbing, or any home service business, we break down how AI and modern marketing can help you book more jobs, close more leads, and build a business that runs without babysitting every task.
If you're a home service pro, you already know the frustration. You're spending thousands on marketing, but the phone isn't ringing enough, or worse, it's ringing, but those leads slip away before you can close a deal. Today, we're sitting down with a guy who's building on both sides of that problem and solved it at scale. Jim Aline built one of the most respected marketing agencies in the roofing industry, Roofer Marketers, scaling from a two-man operation to an industry leader that was eventually acquired by John Nimbus, one of the biggest CRMs in the trades. Now he's back with his next big play, PowerUp Agents, a tech-powered solution that uses AI voice and chat agents to make sure contractors never miss a lead again. In this conversation, Jim's going to break down what it really takes to build a marketing machine that produces leads like clockwork, how to squeeze every drop of value from each customer, the biggest marketing myths holding contractors back, and where AI is actually making a difference in the trades without the hype. Whether you're running a $2 million company trying to hit $5 million, or you're tired of wasting money on leads that go nowhere, you're going to learn a lot from this episode with a blueprint you can use to grow your business and future-proof it for success. Welcome to the show, Jim.
What's up, Mauricio? How you been?
Doing good, man. Doing great, man. We've been talking a little bit more recently, but we first met back in 2018. So
2019. Yeah, 2019. Yeah.
Yeah. So I want to get into it. The first thing I want to talk about is, this is a big topic, right? Even though it's not related to with the contractor space, I think a big topic is really private equity, right? Getting acquired, right? A lot of contractors have a dream of getting acquired for their business, right? Especially in the HVAC and plumbing, and in roofing, a lot of private equity has gone into the space. I work with a lot of contractors that have gotten acquired recently, specifically one company that was doing $7 million in revenue, and they got acquired by a much bigger company. So what are the lessons you learned yourself that you just sold your business 2 years ago that a contractor can apply for their own business, right? What are the lessons you learned about that?
Yeah, there's a lot of lessons. The first piece of advice I would give people is a why, right? Like, why do you want to sell your business? Like, there's something there. For most people, it's the cash, right? It's the chunk of cash that you're hoping to get at the time of your exit. I have a lot of these conversations, Mauricio, on the agency side, on the roofing side. I did a presentation with Mike Braun from Elite Contracting Solutions at the Roofing and Solar Reform Alliance event last year on private equity and on the thought process of it. So I think for everyone, it starts with, oh my goodness, the check that person receive is what I want. And really it comes down to that in our, you know, a lot of times that's when we start why we started our businesses. I think most people start a business to make a living, and then they get these glimpses of what's actually possible. Just had a conversation with an agency owner yesterday. He was looking to sell his marketing agency about 2 years ago for a couple $100,000. He was burnt out. He just wanted out. He was like, I just don't want to do this anymore. Just grinding away. And I'm sure a lot of contractors are in the same space, man. You can't find good people. It's just such a grind all the time. All the problems add up. And then he got this glimmer, and that glimmer was partly our exit and some other exits that he had seen happen in the marketplace. And he's like, whoa, that's possible for us. My friend Jimmy Nichols, who owned a company called Jimmy Marketing, when we first met back in 2019 in that mastermind group, he was in that mastermind group also, and he sold for multiple multiple seven figures. Like, whoa, this is possible. So I think the entrance of private equity into the trades, into the home service market, into the contracting space has shot this glimmer of hope into people's minds. Like, wow, there's something else here. It's not just me running my business day to day, making a good living. There's this other thing I can shoot for. So the first thing is getting an understanding of yourself and what you want out of that. Boy, it's weird when that check hits your bank. And I've talked to a lot of companies that have sold, company owners that have sold. It's like, what do I do now? You're going to miss things that you didn't realize that you would miss. You're going to miss your team. You're going to miss those people that caused you problems every day, most of you, right? And so in thinking of exiting and building something to sell to private equity, I would have a reason why. I would have a number in mind, right? I would say, man, I think that if I get this thing to sell for $5 million, that gives me after taxes X amount, and now I can take care of my family. One of the roofing companies that we worked with in our marketing agency, he ended up selling for, I think it was he got about $6 million cash up front and reinvested part of it into the roll-up, into the portfolio company. And for him, he got to sleep at night. Like, he told me, I don't have to worry if one of my guys has a beer at lunch and goes and hits someone. Like, all of the liability worries came off of his shoulders, and he got a nice check to put in the bank. So for everyone, that's going to be a little bit different, right? There's people out there just chasing the bag, right? They're looking for that big payday. There's others that just want peace of mind that man, I don't have to worry about the liability of it. There's others that maybe you join a portfolio company and your systems and processes really aren't in a good place. But if you roll up into a portfolio company that has their stuff together, now you have the opportunity to participate in something that grows more efficiently. You know, the Robert Kiyosaki book, Rich Dad Poor Dad, they say in there, never take a job for the money, always take a job for what you're going to learn from it, right? He says that in there. And like, participating in this is one of those things. Like, you get to learn a lot. So that's a big ramble, Mauricio. I just rambled on for a little while, but where should we go with this? What do you think?
Well, I think the lessons, I think basically, like, what should a contractor do? I know you didn't own a contracting business, but now you do, right? What should they do in order to build a business that's sellable?
So the first thing is, if you're building a business to sell, you're building a business. Let me repeat that to you. If you're building a business to sell, you are building a business. If you are not building a business to sell, you are self-employed. If you are the person doing everything, you're self-employed. So with the mindset of, I'm going to build something that is sellable, I am going to build a business. I'm going to put the processes in place. I'm going to put the people in place. Going to make it a business. And so I think that's the fundamental place that people should think about, whether they choose to take that check or sell in the future, that if they have that mindset, if I'm building a business to sell, I'm building a real business.
Yeah, exactly. It's like building an actual asset. That's what it is, really. Building an asset that runs without you, that actually can potentially, and what Acquire looks for, honestly, is basically future revenue, right? Future revenue. That's what they're looking at, revenue. So that's kind of like the thing you have to keep in mind is, when you build a business, if you're out of the business, is it going to continue to keep growing? And that's typically like a risk that a acquirer is going to look at. The more risky, the less money they're going to give you. The less risk they see, the more money they'll give you. And typically that's why bigger companies have much higher multiples, because of that principle, right? So that's kind of the lesson you should learn. Obviously, like, if you're looking to retire, that's a different conversation, honestly, versus somebody that is looking to build something in a way that's going to help, honestly, like, pay for their family, right? The future, right? Maybe build generational wealth. That's definitely possible, right? So that's kind of the lessons that you should impart it in with, right? One of the things you talk about, and you're known for a long time, is being like the best known contractor, right? Like the best, like the top of mind strategy, right? Can you unpack that for a bit? What does it mean for a contractor to be best known in their city or in their town? Like, is that, can you unpack that for a bit?
It's been, the coin has been termed for, I think maybe, I don't know if it was coined by Grant Cardone or if he took it from somewhere else, but it's the best known beats best. There's a lot of good contractors in your area, I promise you. There's a lot of good HVAC companies. There's a lot of good roofing companies. There's a lot of good siding companies. There's a lot of good garage door companies. There's a lot of good people that do good work in your area. Why aren't they the most successful? They're not, a lot of times, they're not the most successful from a business aspect, right? From the business perspective, from gross top line, bottom line, right? And so being the best known contractor will win every time. The more people that know who you are and what you do, the more opportunity you have to do business with them. And so if they know that you can solve a specific problem for them, that's what we do. So when we talk about the framework, of the best known framework, which my business partner, Brian Niebler and Roofer Marketers has his own thing right now, the best known business. It's really, it comes down to me, a simple way to look at it is through a quote by Jim Rohn. Jim Rohn said, you need 5 to 7 lead sources to have consistent lead flow in your business. And so in those lead sources, you have multiple lead sources, but what that leads to is people knowing who you are. So the way I look at marketing is marketing is buying a customer. That's what marketing is. At a fundamental level, it's buying a customer. Great contractors are the ones that turn one into many. So they turn that one customer into many customers down the road. And so in being best known, it's first getting as many people to know you in your area as possible. That area could be, you know, the 5 mile famous. It could be, you know, you're known, you know, if you think about from a real estate perspective, some realtors work a really tight neighborhood. Like they're just like I lived in Denver for many years. I lived in the Baker neighborhood and there was a woman, Vivi Glorio. Man, she was everywhere in the neighborhood. But you leave the neighborhood, she didn't care. She wanted to be the best known agent in that area. So you get to pick the geography of being best known, but you just want to be in front of people over and over again. Every time they turn a corner, they see a truck driving by that's yours. They see a yard sign down at their neighbor's house. They see you on Facebook. They're down at the Little League game. They see a sign there. They're on social media. They see you. They search for best roofer city state and you're there. There's everywhere they look, they see you. And when you hear from people, I see you everywhere, you know you are. Like you know that that you're winning that game, that you're actually moving your business forward in that best known aspect. And it's a great thing. It's a crazy thing too. I just got off of a call with the Roofing and Solar Reform Alliance. I do coaching calls over there. I'm a marketing coaching calls. And one of the guys was like, he's been really heavy on his social media this year. And he's like, people are starting to say that to him. I see you all over the place, right? And he did a rebrand. He got his, you know, he has all his trucks wrapped and he doesn't have a lot of trucks, but he, you know, the 2 or 3 trucks that he has are wrapped and they're driving around. And man, I see you guys everywhere, right? Like it's such an amazing thing. And so being top of mind, there's an old adage that only 3% of your market is in buy mode at any given time. Whether that statistic is true or not, I think it's great from a mindset perspective. So if there's, you know, 100,000 people in your market and only 3% of them are in buy mode at any given time, you don't know which 3%. How do you know, right? Now, when we're in a storm restoration market, we know which houses got hit with hail or wind or, you know, the hurricane came through, whatever it was, it's much easier to identify the people who need our help. In a retail market, it's much harder to identify the people that need our help. From a plumbing perspective or an HVAC perspective, like, man, whose HVAC unit, you know, whose air conditioner is going out today? I don't know, right? Out of all 100,000 people. But if you are top of mind to those 100,000 people and they think of you first when they think of the service that you provide, and you're just going to be in a much better place.
Yeah, exactly. It's really just thinking about, especially the type of business that we work with, local service providers, a local service provider. That's what that means, right? So think locally, right? Even though you might be sometimes a big national brand, right? At the end of the day, like if your roofing company has 10 locations, you have 10 different local brands, right? 10 different like actual service brands. So that's basically like the mindset you should have is actually a local service provider. So what that means, where do people go, right? Is it obviously the trucks? You said the trucks, the yard signs is a big part of it, right? Obviously Google, right? We'll talk about that in a second, right? Google My Business, the map section. Like that's the thing you have to kind of think about, is that being a local service provider. So what that means, right? And let's talk about actually that building a marketing machine, right? So what are the essential components of building an inbound predictable lead flow system?
So I think again, we start going back to that same Jim Rohn quote, the 5 to 7 lead sources. So the way I like to frame it, Mauricio, is that I like to frame it as the marketing stack. We could all, you know, talk about it in different ways, but to me, marketing is who you're targeting, right? That's your perfect customer avatar. Your messaging is what you're saying to them. So the who, the what, and the how. So who you're targeting, what you're saying to them, and how you're getting that message in front of them. And so the marketing stack is the how. That's what we're dealing with, is the how. So one channel may be Facebook ads or organic social media, right? Like organic social media is one channel. Paid social media is another channel. Google ads is another channel. Google Local Services ads is another channel. Your Google Business Profile is another channel. Your SEO is another channel, right? And we're stacking these. Your yard signs are another channel. Your trucks wraps are another channel. Your billboards, your TV, your, right? And so the higher your stack of channels, of hows, creates consistent lead flow in your business. That eliminates the downturns. I was just talking with a contractor out of Tampa recently, and who was crushing it with SEO. 30 calls a day, SEO, from their SEO efforts. $30+ million company. There was a recent core algorithm update on Google, plus the lower search volume that we're experiencing right now in roofing and in the trades. Between those two things, his lead volume from that channel dropped by 70-80%. So if he was reliant on the one channel, his lead flow would disappear. Now, he has Google Local Services ads, he has Google ads running, he has multiple poles in the water, so he's starting to be able to make adjustments. Not that they're comfortable adjustments. Google ads is really expensive right now, right? Like the Google Local Services ads, you can't just tell them I need 100 more this week. Like there's things that happen there, but when you're reliant on one channel, you're putting a high amount of risk on your business. On the marketing call on the Roofing and Solar Reform Alliance recently, I had a guy, we were just talking about this too, focused on Facebook ads, crushing it. With his Facebook ads. Can't keep up with the lead flow. Like has to hire a new person, a new like receptionist person to manage his lead flow. Crushing it. And he goes, well, why would I, I just turned my SEO off. I just stopped working on my SEO. I stopped working on it because this is working. And I was like, man, that's from a long-term business perspective, that's risk management. Like what happens when Facebook makes a change? All of a sudden you're gone. Or when your ads get fatigued. I'm sure none of us have ever experienced ad fatigue in our Facebook ads, right? All of a sudden they're just crushing it, leads are flowing in, and then all of a sudden one day it's like, huh, what happened? Why isn't this ad working anymore? Ad fatigue. It stopped. It's not functioning the same way that it was. So building the stack of hows, right? How are we getting our message in front of people? Now, once you have that stack of hows, man, you could start really tweaking the individual channels, saying, boy, on Facebook, we're really crushing it with this offer, but we're not doing well with that offer. Let's split test a different offer and let's move. On Google Ads, maybe you're doing a test of Performance Max versus a regular search campaign. What if we do more display? What if we up our display or pull back on our display? What if we change our retargeting cadence or what? There's so many things that you could play with on each of the hows. Like from an SEO perspective, what if we create more content? What if we create less? What if we create more top of funnel content or middle of funnel content? What if we, like, there's so many things that you can adjust, but until you have that stack, I would build the stack first and then go back and create efficiencies in each of the channels. That would be the way that I would do it.
I think also, I just had an example of a client was doing really well with Google Local Service ads for a long time, right? And they're in the Los Angeles market. And for a long time, they were getting, 50 to 100 leads a month, sometimes 150 leads a month. And the guy had a lack of reviews. They don't have a lot of reviews. And now, like this past year, really his lead flow has completely vanished. And I told the guy straight up, hey, honestly, there's not much you can do. Unless you start getting a lot of reviews, then nothing's going to change. What you have to do is basically adapt, right? And either, try Google ads, right? Facebook ads, do something else. At the end of the day, like LSA, like my experience, it works really great when it works great. But for him, like he has no reviews. He's in LA. LA is like one of the most competitive markets in the US. So if you have like 40 reviews, like there's not much you can do, man. And it doesn't matter who you hire. Like it's done. Like you have to have, they're competing against companies that have thousands of reviews. So it's not going to happen, right? So
the first thing that you should do, if you're sit in your office or your house, wherever your office dot of, wherever your Google business profile is located, and type in your service, city, state, and see what comes up. Look at the companies in the map that show up. You should be one of them, especially when you're in that exact specific location, right? Especially, or if you do a near me search, I hope you show up because you're in that exact location, and Google business profiles are so proximity based. So if you show up, you'll get a chance to see what it looks like for someone to determine if they should call you or not. And again, if you have, what'd you say the guy had, 40 reviews?
40 reviews in LA.
Right? So he has 40 reviews. And if the company's next to him, let's say he comes up first because he's the closest in proximity, right? Like there's a lot of algorithmic stuff in the first, second, and third in there. And proximity is one of them. So he comes up first with 40 reviews, but the next person has 370 and the next person has 490 and they all have 4.9s and five star ratings. Like who are you? Who would you call if you're the customer? We have to be honest with ourselves in the beginning, especially in the beginning phases of our business, or even if we've been in business a long time and we have not done the things that we should have done, right? Like that, like be honest. Be honest with yourself. Don't just say, oh, well, you know, we're just not good at getting reviews. Well, good. You'll be good at going out of business because no one's going to want to call you. So get good at it. Build the skill set. Oh, we're not good at sales, so we're just not going to sell anymore. That's stupid. Focus on the things that you're weak at. Get those reviews. It's going to be an even more impactful thing moving into the age of AI.
Exactly. If you own like a contracting business, if you're advising a contractor that is doing about $2 million in revenue, what are the things they need to do in the first 90 days? Days to like increase lead flow? Like what are the things that you would recommend if you're advising that company? Because you actually are working with a contracting business now.
Yeah, we work with, we own a home services company. We work with a lot of them still. And, you know, from a consulting standpoint, a coaching standpoint, and it depends on what you want, right? This is the thing that I think it's like, what should a $2 million company, let's get it more detailed. What does this $2 million company want to accomplish in the year 2026, Mauricio?
Well, it depends, right? Obviously, if you ask that question, typically they're gonna say they wanna grow, right? So you have to thought about it, right? Typically, if they're thoughtful, right, they actually, hey, I wanna double my business. That means they haven't really had thought that question through, right? But if they say, hey, I wanna get to 3 million and here's the things I need to do to get to that level, then that means they've thought about it and they consider that solution. But most people just, hey,
think about it if they haven't, right? So you're the $2 million roofing company. I'm the consultant here. Mauricio, what do you wanna get to in 2026?
Well, if I'm a $2 million company, right, I want to get to 3 million. I want to first find out how many.
But for you, Mauricio, why 3 million? Why is the number 3 million and not 5?
Well, that's for me, I would like get to 10 million, right? But that's my thing. But
all right, well, why not 10 million then? Why don't we shoot for 10?
Yeah.
Why did 3 come up to you? Like, you know, so we're going to have this conversation. Everyone's going to be different, man. Here's the fun thing about business is this is not black and white. This is a completely gray area. You get to have your own business. Doesn't matter what someone else is doing, what their goals are. You can go to the conferences and see the people on stage with the, you know, they're doing 80 million and they're doing 30 million and they're doing 15. And you could have a $2 million a year company, make $400,000 a year into your bank account, go to the lake every summer and fish and have a, you know what I mean? Like, and have an like an amazing life. So what do you want out of your business is what I really want to ask that $2 million contractor, right? And so then we're going to determine, what do I want? Let's pretend that this is a growth-minded person. That let's go back to the beginning. Hey, I want to sell to PE. Like this is the $2 million company that wants to get to 10, that wants to exit to private equity. Let's play this one out, right? At $2 million, you may be the only salesperson in a roofing company, in an HVAC or something like that. You'll have to have a few technicians, of course, you know, on that side. But from a roofing perspective, I know owners that sell 2 million themselves, like without, like they sell 2 million. Like I know sales reps that sell 2, 4, 5 million plus a year, you know, so it's, who are you? Like, so now where do we need to start? Okay, well, I'm the salesperson. I sold 2 million last year and I want to get this thing to 10 over the next 3 years. Like let's put that path in place. I'm going to sit down and I'm going to say, okay, what do we have in place now? What are the fundamentals that we have? What do we have from that marketing stack, right? Where are we at? What do we have? Are we doing anything? Or do I just know everyone in town and they just call me because they know me? Because that happens too. You know, so we want to get a baseline evaluation of where you're at. Okay, now that we know your baseline valuation, okay, I have a website, I have 40 reviews, I do every social media post every couple weeks, I'm doing stuff, right? I'm doing stuff, but you know, really what I'm doing is when a storm comes through, I'm getting out there, right? I know, and a lot of people know me. I know a bunch of insurance agents or, you know, so now it's like, okay, well, what's working for us now? What can we put more effort into now? What if working with insurance agents is like, man, you've gotten a lot of relationships in insurance. So you get a bunch of referrals. You get $1.5 million in referrals every year. And then you go sell another, you know, $500,000 to the neighbors, right? Like, and you're at $2 million. Well, let's put a process in place to go get more insurance agents, right? And then have sales reps that take those insurance agent referrals and go and run the appointments for you. Now we're starting to build the sales team. Now that we have the sales team and we have the lead flow coming in here, let's continue to stack those channels and build additional lead flow that we can give to these sales reps. Now we can train and have good sales reps and manage these good sales reps. Now we need a production manager. Now we need job site supervisors. Now we're starting to just look at all the pieces that we need to put in place and work it backwards from that $10 million company. So it's individualized. There's no magic pill. It doesn't exist. There's no easy button, no magic pill. Figure out what you want. Look at where you want to go. Work it backwards. Develop metrics around leading and lagging indicators. I'm a big fan of EOS. We've implemented EOS in all of our businesses. If you don't know what that is, it's the Entrepreneurial Operating System. Go read the book Traction by Gino Wickman. That's a starting place for it. But what gets measured expands. Right. So now when we're looking at that $2 million business, we know that we need more lead flow. Maybe we need to hire more sales reps. We need a product, like we can measure things that we need to happen. Right. If you're an HVAC company, okay, we need enough lead flow to get this technician going, you know, and getting all of his time filled so that he's at capacity. And now we know when we need the next one is when our lead flow goes above X amount. Now we need to start recruiting the next person. Same thing from a sales perspective. So it's a very challenging, there's no easy answer, but really figure out what you are trying to accomplish. Work it backwards down to what can we measure this week that tells us if we're moving in the right direction or not.
Yeah. I mean, that's a great answer, right? Basically, like, you have to understand who you are first. I could tell you've been a coach for a little bit of time and you've been coaching different people. It's important because people say things, right? But you have to understand the actual meaning before the actual answer to that question. And once you get a clear definition of what they want to do, then you can kind of develop a game plan for that, achieving that thing. Because a lot of people are just, you're right, people are different, right? Some people are growth minded. Some people just want to stay at 5 million. They're happy at that level, right? And they're making money every year. They have no plans on selling the business. It just depends on the person, right? It's important they adapt though. It's important that they actually do adapt, because if they stay the same, then it's not gonna work out in the end.
Yeah, and that's risk management, right? It's like, We do an exercise every now and then called kill your business. So we look at internal factors that'll kill your business. We look at external factors that will kill your business, and just start making lists, man. Like, if my production manager quit today, I'm out of luck. If my operations person, if my office manager quit, I don't know what we would do. If my sales team left and went to another company, there's no way I would survive. Those are those internal risks. Now we're looking at external risks. Did private equity come into your marketplace already, or are they entering your marketplace and their marketing budgets are outrageous compared to what you can invest? Okay, how am I gonna manage that risk? Right? How am I going to look at that external risk? What is AI going to do to my business? That's an external risk. What is the economy going to do? So we're looking at what could kill our business, and we're just, you know, it's risk management. In business, the wolf is always chasing you. You have to keep running. There is no, you cannot stop, to your point. You can't stop. You'll get eaten alive if you stop. And so, but you can still have a $2 million business and be very successful and have everything that you want out of life and out of your business, and still manage the risk of going out of business, right? Of being eaten alive by the wolf down the road.
Yeah. You mentioned AI, right? Let's talk about AI. What are some of the most common applications or exercises that a contractor can do? Because a lot of contractors, my experience working with contractors for a long time, they're skeptical, right? They're also kind of afraid of technology a little bit. Things like even computer things are still like new to them, honestly. So how would a contractor adapt? And what are the things they should know about AI in a practical manner? Not just like big picture, just a practical manner.
So in a practical manner, it's going to happen then the transition and the execution of AI is going to be much slower than we anticipate and much faster at the same time, which is a weird thing to say, right? Like, it's a weird thing to say. First of all, it's going to happen much slower. The large language models still hallucinate. They still come up with weird answers. There's not, but then there, it's faster where one update from, you know, GPT-4.0 to GPT-5, and I'm not saying that this is the one, but one update in that changes the ability of the AI, right? By leaps and bounds. Grok just came out with a new model recently, and it has a PhD level understanding of, I think it's every topic, something like that. Like, it's crazy. PhD level understanding of every general discipline, mathematics, you know, science. Like, it has a PhD level understanding of that, which is fascinating, right? It's so crazy. But how the slow part is, and how do we use these tools? Okay, and are they effective? We work a lot in AI voice. AI voice has made some amazing improvements. But at the same time, a lot of people are out there just writing what we call single prompt agents. They write, you know, 80 words, you know, 120 words, maybe 500 words of prompt, and they say, here's your answering service. Like, and then people start to use it and they're like, well, that sucks. They're like, yeah, that's terrible. That's not a good user experience. So the technology might be there, but it's not as useful. Like, it's so there's this game that's playing out right now of, like, how useful is it and how adaptable is it? So some of the things that I've seen from contractors, roofing contractors specifically, because that's more where I live, is in the roofing world. And then I'll talk about home service, what we're doing in our own company. But from in the roofing world, estimating is something that I'm seeing done. Insurance documentation review is something that I've seen people do. And now, again, we have to take it with a grain of salt because it may hallucinate a little bit. But if you write good prompts, you get good answers. So in computer programming, I started doing computer programming in 2002. I did server-side programming, and web development is garbage in gets garbage out, right? So you put garbage in, you get garbage out. So you have to really look at how you can put good information in one side to get good information out of the other side. So, you know, it can analyze insurance paperwork. It can analyze a claim. It can analyze... Again, analyze and look through a lot of stuff, but you still have to manage it. It's not going to just do it for you. You still have to kind of put checks and balances on it. From a voice perspective, it can access data. It can read back things very well to you, but it can't think. It can't show emotion. It can't. Like, there's a lot of stuff that it can't do. So analyzing estimates, building estimates, creating SOPs for your company. How many listeners, put it in the comments, I love SOPs. You're going to get no comments on this video, Mauricio. No, like, you're a very special person to me if you enjoy putting together SOPs. Boy, you go into ChatGPT or Grok or Claude or any of them and you say, you are an expert at business operations. I'm the owner of XYZ Roofing Company. I am looking to put together a SOP for this. Ask me any clarifying questions and help me build it out. And it will ask you the questions that it needs and it will build it out for you. Another great place is building job descriptions. Job descriptions get built really well and really efficiently in the LLMs. Ads, recruiting ads get built out really well in the LLMs. Marketing content gets built out really well in the LLMs. Write me 10 hooks for my social media video, my Facebook video that I'm planning to shoot on what are the three best things that you can do to XY to you know, keep your roof healthy through the year, whatever it is, right? Like, it will come up with all the ideas and topics for you. It'll write the scripts. It'll do all this stuff. So there's a lot of things that are happening that are very easy. Marketing is one of them, man. Like, content creation, it knows how to, like, really what these LLMs are at a core level is they're really good that the only thing they're doing is predicting the next word. So anything that involves writing, they're pretty good at.
Yeah. One of the things that we talked about last week was the importance of maximizing every single lead, right? And improving, like, the actual customer value, like squeezing the juice out of every lead. Can you unpack that for a second? Can you talk about that?
Yep. So let's talk about it from the customer journey journey perspective, because that's my, like, that's where I love is the customer journey. So maximizing the customer journey, creating the best customer experience. So you have awareness, you have consideration, you have purchase, you have the fulfillment of your services, and you have loyalty. That's the customer journey. So there, at each of those phases of the customer journey, we are able to maximize what we're getting and what we can get in the future from those. So let's start with awareness. We talked about that, building that marketing stack, right? Getting so many people to know who you are and what you do that when it's time to call, they're going to call you. That's that awareness phase. They know that they already know that they want to use you in that marketing or in that awareness phase. They know that you're the type of company that they align with culturally. They know that you provide value and you're not, your perfect customer isn't looking for the lowest price. They're looking for someone that's going to be there and take care of them. That's maximizing that awareness stage. In the consideration phase, that's when they're filling out that form on your website. That's when they're making that phone call to you. That's when they're looking for pricing about your services. You know, how can we maximize that customer journey in roofing? Maybe you're using a tool like Roofl. Maybe you're using a tool like Roofar. Maybe you're building an estimator tool. Maybe you're writing blog content about what is the cost of a roof and how is this determined. In that consideration phase, that's going to help to maximize them. It's going to build trust with them. How is your phone being answered? What is your customer service person saying? Are they booking the appointment on that call? Or are they saying, hey, you know what? You sound like you'd be a good customer of ours. We could help you with that. I'll have John call you back in some time whenever he has time to maybe talk to you about when he could possibly come out. Doesn't sound as good as, hey, get John out there on Thursday or Friday. Would either of those work better for you? Right? That, you know, booking that appointment on the first call, squeezing the juice out of that consideration phase, then moving into the purchase phase, optimizing your sales conversations, right? Optimizing your sales presentations, making sure that you're exhibiting value. There's some phenomenal coaches in the roofing industry that are really great at this. I just had Deshaun Bryan on my podcast and we talked about the power of no. And so, you know, from a sales psychology perspective, are your salespeople getting all of the no's out of the way before they do the presentation? If you could get the no's out of the way before the presentation, then there are no objections afterward. So Mr. and Mrs. Homeowner, what would prevent you from using us? What are you looking for in a contractor? Oh, it's price. Okay, great. Well, when you say price, you know, are you meaning, you know, you just want the lowest price and you don't care what kind of materials or go in, you don't care what the timeline is, you don't care, you know, what the warranty is, or are you saying you want the best price for the value that you're getting? What do you, you know, and so you're getting a lot of the objections out of the way. Okay, great. Now let me go and inspect your roof once I have all, like, how are you doing that? Chuck Tokey is another person that's phenomenal in the roofing industry for sales training and getting a lot of those overcoming objections and the sales presentation, being professional. Another part of the purchase decision phase is your brand, right? You have a brand whether you know it or not. If you show up in a rusted Ford F-150 with a magnet slapped on the side, that homeowner, your brand is, you can negotiate with me. I'm cheap. If you show up in a very professional truck or van that's wrapped and you're, you know, you have a nice polo shirt tucked in and belts and nice pants and you know what I mean? Like you're more, you know, the clipboard, the tool belt, you're portraying your brand. You're portraying value to the customer. So squeezing the juice out of that. Now into the fulfillment of the services. How are you communicating with a homeowner along the journey, right? Like the way I like to frame it is, if your customer is wondering, you're losing. So if your customer is wondering, and I wonder when they're coming to install my new AC unit, you're losing. I wonder when my materials are getting ordered for my job, you're losing. I wonder when John's going to call me back again, you're losing. I wonder what the warranty is on this after we do this, you're losing. Anytime your customer is wondering, you're losing. So if you could close the gaps on wondering through automated communication, maybe you shoot videos that are the most frequently asked questions and they drip out to your customers. Your team gets notifications to text and to send a text, an email, and make a phone call when they know when materials are going to be ordered or when materials get ordered, when they know that the job is on the schedule, when they they know that the crew has been scheduled to show up on this specific day on this specific time. When you're telling your customer, when you're, you know, going through the list of things that you want to make sure that they have in place, hey, make sure all your cars are out of the driveway, make sure that your pets are, you know, are put away, you know, make sure all these things, don't have stuff on the, from a roofing perspective, don't have a lot of stuff on the shelves, right? Don't have grandma's ashes up on the, up on a shelf that's kind of flimsy. You know, we're going to be banging and tearing things apart and, you know, like make sure that these things are all communicated. And then in the loyalty phase, is your team asking for referrals? Are they asking for the review? Are you communicating with that customer for the rest of your life? Sending them newsletters, you know, having them connect with you on social media so they see that. Like, what are you sending them a post-job gift? Are you like, what ways can we improve that efficiency? So we're going through the customer journey. We're looking at, we're thinking if our customer is wondering, we're losing. So even if the market, in the marketing perspective, is this a good company to call? They're thinking that you're losing. How could you fix that? Reviews, right? How do you close these gaps along the way? We had a company that we worked with that was closing 52% of all lead flow that came through the door. That's outrageous. This isn't 52% of their sales conversations, 52% of their SQLs, 52% of MQLs, marketing qualified leads. Any phone call that came into the business, 52% of them ended up in a closed job. That's like because they dialed in and focused on every single piece of that customer journey and improved it and improved their communication and sat back and said, man, we keep getting this question over and over again at this point. Okay, let's answer that question before it gets asked. And all along the way, and then the referrals start pouring in and it's just a fantastic cycle. Hopefully that answers the question.
Yeah, it's amazing. Yeah. I mean, I think one of the things that I've seen over time, right, a lot of contractors have had negative experiences with marketing agencies, and we talked about this last time. I think, you know, I think basically it's a combination of multiple things. But the thing that can solve that, I think, is what we talked about last time, is understanding really your numbers, right? Understanding cost per acquisition. So let's unpack that for a second, because that's the most important thing. If they know what their cost per acquisition is, it gives them a lot more power and visibility into hiring the right agency and actually if doing a good job. So let's unpack cost per acquisition. How do they determine that? Let's talk about that. Yeah.
So take all of the revenue that you got from last year, divide it by the number of jobs you did, and that, you know, that your marketing budget, take your whole marketing budget that you had last year, divide the number of jobs you got in that you got from that. That's your customer acquisition cost, right? And so that's the simplest way, right? And so if you did $1 million in revenue and you had 100 jobs, what would that be? $100 customer acquisition, 100 times 100?
You'd be $1,000
acquisition cost, right? So that's what it costs you to acquire a customer. Doesn't really matter what it cost you to acquire in the past. That could give you a metric to work off of, like, hey, yeah, this is what our customer acquisition cost has been, but that doesn't say give me a measurement that I can use into the future. So I like to think about a customer acquisition cost range. And the way I like to look at this range is at the low end, we're printing money. Like Warren Buffett would just put all of Berkshire Hathaway's money into this investment, right? Like these guys are printing money. In the roofing world, you know, if you're sub $500 on a customer acquisition cost, you're printing money. Like that's printing money. If your margins are put together properly, if you're pricing your jobs properly. I see some roofing contractors pushing $2,500, $3,000 on the high end of that range. They're willing to pay $3,000 for that next customer because, like we talked about earlier, is marketing is buying a customer, right? And so there's that customer acquisition cost. The other metric involved in that is the long-term value of that customer. So you get the one. The best companies out there are great at turning one into many. So they buy the first job and then they get the referrals. They get the relationship with the insurance agent. They get a couple of houses in the neighborhood because there was a storm that came through. They know maybe I have to pay $2,500 for this job, but all over the next year or 3 years, I get 5 jobs from that. So my real customer acquisition cost now is $500 because I'm doing all of the things that turn it into long-term value. If you're an HVAC company or a plumbing company, maybe that first service call costs you all of the profit on that job. But you know in that if you do a good job and you take care of that customer, the next time they have a problem, the next time that they need something, they're going to call you again. And so, or they're going to tell their neighbor, they're going to tell their friend, they're going to, like, you're buying new customers. So on the high end is, we don't want to get in trouble here. We don't want to be not be profitable. But can we keep our crews busy? Can we keep our people busy? Can we keep our office running? Can we pay our overhead? Can we keep this going if we're at this customer acquisition cost? If we're on the low end, we're printing money. Now we have a range to measure. And so whether you hire an in-house marketing person or you work with an agency or multiple agencies, now you have a benchmark for them to fall into. Now you have something to compare one channel against another channel. Hey man, through our LSAs, we're at, you know, $500 all day for a customer acquisition cost, but for Google Ads, we're at $2,500. Which channel is better? But not which channel is better. Maybe we can't get enough LSA ads to hit our revenue goals, but we can add in the Google Ads, and now we get to enough lead flow to get to our revenue goals. So we're gonna have to pay more for these, but it's still gonna get us to where we want to go. So there's a lot of decisions that get to be made in there, but you have to know that. I feel you have to know what's an acceptable range for you.
Yeah, exactly. It's really about making sure your data is clean, right? Having a good CRM, right? A good CRM that tracks everything, tracks your invoices, tracks your sales. I mean, there's a lot of CRMs that can do this, right? I'm agnostic to that solution. And I'm understanding what your customer's worth. Like another way to say it's lifetime value, right? Customer lifetime value, what each customer's worth. Especially in the roofing, right? It's really a lot of times they have one and done. But it's, if you look at it in a manner that's recurring, right? If you can sell them something or sell them a referral, get a referral, then you can actually increase that lifetime value. It's not always just one and done, right? Because if you do a good job on the roof, it could last, you know, 15 to 20 years, right? But it's looking at that in that manner where it teaches you like that other aspect of, hey, I want this guy to come back, potentially maybe sell more, and what, like, how much is actually each customer is worth to my business, right? That's an important thing to understand too. And then I can figure out the marketing aspect, right? Then I can figure out, hey, how much is it going to cost? Is it going to cost? Like, that's a big thing and all that side. So you obviously work with hundreds of contractors, right? You're coaching them now. You're also interviewed, like, I think over close to 300 episodes now on the Roofing Success episode. What are the common traits that you see in the most successful entrepreneurs in the space?
So there's one very common theme. I think we're at like 270, 275 now of episodes. So in On the Roofing Success podcast, I interview successful contractors, right? So like these are a lot of people that have done well. Man, the common theme is that they really care about the customer experience. They really care that they do a good job. They're willing to pay for mistakes that they've made, even if they weren't mistakes that they made. They're willing to do whatever it takes to make that customer happy and to create a good experience, right? It really bothers them when something goes wrong. It really bothers them when the sales rep isn't performing up to their ability, because they know that they're the best in town, that they can do a better job than the competitor, that when their whole team becomes sold on the business versus selling, right? They're sold on the culture, they're sold on the quality, they're sold on everything that the company does. And so that's the first thing, is that that's been the most common theme. It's like, my goodness, the most successful owners are the ones that just, they care so much about doing the right thing for the homeowner, they will. And they're not cutting corners, and they're going to do it the right way. And if it doesn't go the right way, I mean, I've just a story recently, there's an episode that just came out with Warner Roofing out in St. Louis, a $50 million company. And they had a time when they put the wrong color roof on. Someone didn't check it. Roof went on, you know, like, and in the sales presentation, like the homeowner selected, you know, whatever it was, this charcoal gray or whatever, right? And you know, granite went on or whatever, you know, like it wasn't a complete, and the homeowner was, you know, I don't know, because you can ask, hey, you know what? We made a mistake. What do you want to do here, Mr. and Mrs. Homeowner? And they're like, you know, some homeowners might just say, you know what? I'm fine. I don't care what my roof color is, and, you know, go on with your day. This homeowner was hesitant. They're like, you know, I really like whatever color I chose. And so they put a new roof on the house because they made the mistake, right? It was such a close variant, Mauricio, that they could have just pushed it aside. Like, they could have just not said anything and hoped that the homeowner didn't notice. It was a different shade of brown, or it was, you know what I mean? Like, it wasn't, you know, they put a pink roof on a house that they chose a you know, brown shingle on. Like, it wasn't that. They could have let that go, but they knew that they didn't do the right thing. So they presented it to the homeowner and they paid the price. They wrote the check to get it done correctly, right? And so, and then, you know, the business lessons of that are we put more checks and balances in place, right? I talked to a guy down at a conference one time that his crew put a roof on the neighbor's house instead of the house they were supposed to put a roof, right? Like, there, things happen. The ones that care the most and are willing to do the right thing, that's the very most common thread between everyone.
Yeah. I want to ask you this because I think it's important that contractors understand this point. You've been on both sides. What are the things that a contractor needs to do on their end, right? You talked about the numbers, right? That when they hire a marketing agency, they should know and they should do on their end to actually make the partnership successful.
Yeah, we do this in the RSRA, in the Roofing and Solar Reform Alliance. We have Adam Benzman created something called the Marketing Control System, and we teach this framework of, you know, kind of know your numbers. You have to know your metrics first. You have to know what success looks like in each of these areas, or at least have a good understanding. Most of you in the roofing space, you're really a general contractor hiring subs, right? Like, you're hiring, you know, in an HVAC or plumbing, you may be, you know, a single focused service provider, but, you know, a lot of times, you know, a lot of contractors are more general contractors. So you know that maybe you don't know everything about plumbing. You may not want to plumb the house or replumb the house. You may not, you know, HVAC, but you don't want to run the ductwork. You know roofing, but you don't want to nail the shingles, right? And maybe, like, you might not do a good job at it, but you know the process of a proper installation, right? That's what I feel like gets missed from the marketing perspective and for other business things in your business. As the owner, as the CEO, as you're growing a business, you have to know enough to generally contract these areas of your business. So understanding, hey, these are the this is where we're looking to go. If you have no vision of where you want to go, how do you expect your marketing agency or anyone else to help you get there? Like, you're telling them, hey, drive me over there somewhere. Where are we going? Do we want, where's over there? We could go northeast, we could go southwest. Like, where over there are we going? We have to know a direction that we're going. So the better that you can clearly articulate where you want to go, what your customer acquisition cost range is, get agreement. I feel like again, back to that easy button magic pill, there is none. So when I hire an outsourced company, I treat them as if the same as I treat an internal company. We have metrics on a scorecard that they are responsible for, that they agree to. I can't put metrics on my scorecard that someone doesn't agree to. So if my sales rep, if I have a, you know, that they close 5 jobs a week, that's on our scorecard, that's our metric, 5 jobs a week, and I never tell them that, how can I hold them responsible to it? I can't. So if I sit down with my sales rep and I say, Joe, hey, based on your skill set and the lead flow that you have and that we're giving you, it shouldn't be outrageous for you to close 5 jobs a week. Would you agree? Yeah, I agree. I agree that 5 jobs. Yeah, if I'm getting this amount of lead flow and I'm hitting, you know, doing this amount of appointments and I'm inspections and I'm doing this. Yeah, I see that I could close 5 a week. Now, as you're managing Joe through the weeks, through the months, through the years, you have a metric that Joe is aligning with. Hey, Joe, you only closed 3 this week. What's going on, man? Yeah, it was a bad week. We had, you know, it was either his sales pitch was off or lead flow was down or something, you know, like, let's go and look at what levers we can pull here to help Joe get back to 5 a week or above 5 a week. And so the same thing with a marketing agency. You want to say, look, this is the direction we're going. This is the lead flow that we're looking to accomplish. This is the customer acquisition cost range that we're looking to be in. Mauricio, can you guys, do you agree that if we hire you, can you meet these metrics? Is this something that you feel like you guys can accomplish?
It depends, right? Of course.
It depends. So yes or no, right? You get to tell them yes or no, right? Like, yeah, that looks like something based on the hundreds of you know, millions and millions of dollars of Google ads that we've managed over the, you know, 8-10 years in business. Like, yeah, we're looking at your numbers, and we can, you know, based on our experience in SEO, LSA, Google ads, Facebook ads, that seems like a reasonable metric for us to hit. Great. Now you get buy-in from the agency. Now, when if things are out of alignment, now you can have real conversation. If you say, if you don't tell them, I need 5 jobs, you need to close 5 a week, and Joe shows up to the sales meeting, and you're like, you know, and you're berating Joe for closing 2, and Joe's like, man, I thought I did good. I went on 4 appointments, and I closed 2 deals, man. I was at 50% close rate. I thought I was doing good. You didn't properly communicate your expectations up front. So properly communicate your expectation. Get buy-in on the metrics on your scorecard. Treat them as if they are almost an employee, right? You have a partnership relationship where it's like, hey, if we're not hitting these metrics, what would you do if you had a sales rep that didn't hit their metrics week over week over week over week over week? Well, you would try to help them get better. Like, what can we do to help you get better? Maybe it's you need to provide better content to your marketing agency. Maybe you need better reviews, right? You're not giving them the tools that they need to accomplish the goal, but they should be honest with you about that, like you were with that contractor in Los Angeles. Look, 40 reviews, you're out of luck. No matter what we do, no one's going to call you. But then on the other side, it's, hey, we've done all these things and we're still not hitting these metrics. You know, if I'm an employer, I may fire that person, right? We may part ways. You might not be the right person for us, the right agency for us. We may need to move on, but at least you have something to measure against and you've clearly expressed what your needs are.
Yeah, that's great, man. I mean, I hope you guys understand that lesson. It's very important what he just said. It's going to help you. It's going to help you save money. It's also going to help you save a lot of headaches too as well in the future. I want to wrap this up. I mean, this has been terrific. Thank you for the answer. It's been amazing. Great conversation. You know, talk about the future of marketing and AI. How are things going to be changing in the next 5 years? What do you see? Because I think a lot of things are going to be changing with marketing, especially in the contracting space. What are things changing in the next 5 years?
So what changes from a marketing perspective is the how. The who and the what do not change. Who, what, how. The only thing that changes is the how, right? Before radio, there was print. There was word of mouth, right? Like, then radio came along. Then there was radio as a how. Then there was TV as a how. Then there was yellow pages as a how. There's newspapers as a how. There's, like, it's just the how, right? The how changes. Who your perfect customer usually doesn't change much over the years. The messaging to them doesn't change much. Once you develop effective messaging around what problems you can solve for them, it's only the how. So be ready to make your shifts in the how, right? There are going to be the fundamentals, reputation, brand, all of the things. It's kind of funny. All of the things that are happening in AI optimization, like the AI browser optimization and search optimization, if you look at what that is, it's SEO. SEO plus good reviews, which is also SEO. So like, it's local SEO is what AI is using to rank people today. And so as this changes, it's just the how from a marketing perspective. Continue to watch. Gary Vaynerchuk says it's just arbitraging attention, right? So where are the eyeballs going? Okay, the eyeballs are on Google. Now the eyeballs are on ChatGPT and Google and Perplexity. Okay, now the eyeballs, right? Where are the eyeballs? Wherever the eyeballs are, that's the how. Just keep chasing the how with proper messaging, knowing your customer, knowing your avatar, and you will continue to make it through and thrive through all of the changes.
Awesome. Hey, Jim Aline, thank you, man. I really appreciate it. Where can people find you?
Yeah, Facebook, Jim Aline on Facebook, roofingsuccesspodcast.com, roofingsuccess on all social media channels, powerupagents.ai, and in the Roofing and Solar Reform Alliance.
Awesome. Hey, Jim, thanks.
Thanks for listening to AI and Marketing for Home Service Pros. If you got value from today's episode, do us a favor. Follow the show, share it with a contractor friend, and leave a quick review. Want help using AI or smarter marketing to grow your business? Head to contractormarketingpros.net and book your free strategy call.